This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
We are proposing four major reforms to the tax code on the personal and business side. The first is tax relief for American families. The second is simplification, eliminating loopholes that make our system complex and unfair. The third is making our business rates competitive again. The fourth is eliminating the incentives that reward offshoring of jobs and keep cash overseas.
Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour. Jim Poplava and John Loeffler here with you. This is the part of the show which we traditionally call the big picture, because as we are all awash in data points, a lot of people need interpretation of what those data points mean. And speaking of data points, the big story this week, the Republican House submitted its tax plan in its entirety. It's gone past the speculation stage. This is the working plan. It will have to be voted on by the House and then sent over to the Senate, and then some kind of reconciliation bill passed between the two, assuming that they get it through the Senate. And everybody's hoping, this is what the nomenclature says right now, they hope it gets passed by Thanksgiving. Now, there are all kinds of stories floating out there, and it's very difficult to tell what's going on because everybody's trying to score political points. The Republicans, including the president, say it helps the middle class, and there's some assumption in there that it's going to help small businesses, even so, though some of the small businesses are already groaning that it doesn't do anything for them. The Democrats say it hurts the middle class and helps the rich, and it seems like they may have some things to bolster their side of the argument, too. Ah, the details are just so fun. But what we're going to do here today on the program is really take a hardcore look at the bill and see who's been naughty and who's been nice. That's a terrible analogy, Jim. That's Christmas time. We just got through Halloween and we're not even into Thanksgiving. You know, they've got the decorations up in the hardware stores already.
God, it's hard to believe where this year went. Here we are entering, 52 days to Christmas. But anyway, let's get into the weeds here, and we'll try to give you some analysis. The first thing that came out is originally they were talking about having three tax rates, 12, 25, and 35. Well, we ended up, as it's proposed, with four tax rates because they left the high-end tax bracket for wealthy individuals at 39.6. Now, let's take a look at how this lines up, depending if you're single and married. Let's begin with where we are right now. If you are single, there's a 10% tax bracket on the first $9,300 of income, and you're in a 15% bracket on the first, I'm rounding these numbers off, $38,000. Then it jumps to roughly the 25% bracket at $92,000, the 28% bracket at $192,000, the 33% bracket at $417,000, the 35% bracket, this is a joke, at $418,000, and then the 39.6 at $419,400. Now, here's what changes. If this goes through, the 10% bracket jumps to the 12% bracket on the first $45,000 of income. Now, think about that. That's a big difference of 12%. Then, after $45,000, you're in a 25% bracket, if you're single, on the first $200,000. That compares to roughly $191,650, so not much change there. Then it goes to a 35% bracket, so the 33% bracket is eliminated. You get bumped up to 35% on income up to $500,000. Over $500,000, you're in the 39.6% bracket. Now, how does this stack up for married couples? If you are, let's take where we are now. You're in a 10% bracket if you're married on the first $18,650, a 15% bracket up to $76,000, a 25% bracket up to roughly starting at $153,000, 28% at $233,000, 33% bracket at $416,700, 35% on 470, 700, and then you go up to 39.6. Here's what changes. If you are married, and this is a big one, you are in a 12% bracket on the first $90,000 that you make. Then from $90,000 to $260,000, you are in a 25% bracket. Then from $260,000 up to $1 million, you're in a 35% bracket. And over $1 million, you are in the 39.6% bracket. So what happens? We had two tax rates that increased. The 10% bracket goes to the 12% bracket under the Republican plan. The 33% bracket goes to the 35% bracket. Then we have two tax rates that fall. The 15% bracket drops down to 12, and the 28% bracket drops down to 25. And of course, the 35 and the 39.6 brackets remain the same. So the top tax rate on the wealthy remains in place at 39.6. It was originally thought, John, they would reduce it. What they did is they extended the range more, but kept the top tax bracket. So for many individuals, you are going to see individual tax rates come down because we no longer have some of these brackets. And like I said, the 15 drops to 12 and the 28 drops to 25. And unless you're Larry Lotsabucks, you're unlikely to get into the 35 or the 39.6% bracket.
Okay, there was also talk about changes in capital gains and dividends, and of course this affects investors.
No change there. The top tax rate on capital gains and dividends remains the same at 23.8% as the top rate. None of that changed. They did change the exemption on estates. Right now, you can pass $5,490,000. They doubled that exemption to $11,200,000. So a husband and wife with a living trust can pass $22,400,000. And in the year 2024, the estate tax goes to zero. So that's some of the big perks there.
Yeah, here's what I want to get to, because what we see happening here, at least what I'm anticipating, is that we're being Reaganized in that certain deductions are going to be phased out. Now, the exemptions will be increased under this plan. We need to look at that, and then deductions phased out. But then in 2 years, you know, you can anticipate another change. So let's look at deductions, because that's where a lot of the hullabaloo is about right now.
All right. The standard deduction, that is a standard deduction. If you're a person, maybe you don't have any deductions. Your house is paid for. You live in a state that has no income taxes. So you just take the standard deduction. That will double for a single individual from 6 to 12 and for a married couple from 12 to 24. But here's the catch. It's not all that it's cracked up to be. And here's why. Number one, you're also going to lose your exemption. And right now, in 2017, the exemption is $4,050. So you're losing that while they're increasing the standard deduction. So if you were single, right now you have a standard deduction of $6,000, and you also have an exemption of $4,050. So if you subtract the loss of the exemption of $4,050 from the increase that you're getting in the standard deduction, it really, John, is not a double. You only benefit by $1,950. Now, here's something they're not telling you about. If you are married and you have, let's say, a family of four, husband and wife, two kids, the standard deduction goes from $12,000 to $24,000. So you can say, wow, it doubles. But it really doesn't. Because here's what happens. If you are taking exemptions for yourself of, let's say, four exemptions, which would be $16,200, well, if you take $16,200 and you subtract that from the $24,000, you're really only benefiting by $7,800, but you really aren't. You're better off where you are today, because where you are under the present law, you would get $12,000 as a standard deduction, and you would get $16,200 from having four exemptions. So you would get a write-off of $28,200 versus the $24,000. So you're actually to the negative by 4,200. They don't explain that one very well. So for many married couples that are taking the standard deduction, and let's say they have two kids, John, they would actually be worse off.
It seems like they're phasing out other things as well. What are those?
Okay, they're basically doing away with the medical deduction. Right now, if you have medical expenses that exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income, that's the bottom line on the front page of your tax return, you get to deduct that. Well, they're doing away with that. And that really is going to hit a lot of retirees, especially those that get sick, or let's say those that go into a retirement home, where as a result of, let's say, Alzheimer's, dementia, you need around-the-clock care. Well, a lot of people that get in that situation, and I have clients like this, they deduct that cost from their tax return. Well, they're doing away with the medical deduction. What else are they doing away with? They're doing away with the deductibility of state income taxes, which really hurts people that live in states like New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, California, especially here in California. They would limit the property tax deduction to $10,000. So that doesn't really give you much. I mean, here in California, you know, you want to buy a middle-class home here in Southern California, you're going to be paying upwards close to $700,000, $800,000, $900,000. If you're up in the San Francisco Bay Area, starter homes are $1.4 million. You can imagine the property taxes. So they limit the property tax to $10,000. They also would cut the amount of interest you're able to deduct from owning a home. Right now, you can deduct up to $1 million plus an additional $100,000 for a second mortgage. So $1.1 million, that would drop to $500,000. And so the home builders, the national realtors are really going to lobby to fight this one, because not only are you getting rid of the property taxes, you're also getting rid of the ability to deduct mortgages, especially in along the East Coast. You know, $1 million home in New York isn't much. If you're in Manhattan or Long Island, $1 million doesn't buy you a lot, nor does it buy you a lot in Beverly Hills, San Diego, or San Francisco. So they're also going to be getting rid of miscellaneous deductions. So the only thing that they're saving here is charitable deductions. And I haven't read the full detail of the bill, but it's supposed to allow charitable deductions. And then mortgage interest deduction is capped at a $500,000 mortgage. But they're getting rid of everything else: state taxes, limiting property taxes, medical deductions, property and casualty deductions. Think of all those people in Texas and Florida that lost their homes. They're able to deduct that. Not anymore if this goes through. And then miscellaneous deductions, business expenses and things like that. Also, deductibility of student loan interest. So there are a whole bunch of things that are going to be eliminated. Now, let's go over on the business side. Here's where I guess it's very favorable. If you have a C corporation, which is mainly the big corporations you see on the stock exchange, the corporate tax rate drops from 35 to 20%. Also, tax-exempt bonds could no longer be used to build professional sports stadiums. So all those billionaires that own professional teams, NFL teams, they're not going to be able to deduct that. It sets up a 25% pass-through tax rate on sub-S and partnerships, so that if you are owning your own business, running it as a sub-S or a partnership, anything you have in profit in the corporation after you pay yourself a salary, right now is taxed at 39.6, that would drop to 25%. There's also going to be limits on corporate interest deductions, which would be capped at 30% of EBITDA. That's before taxes, depreciation, amortization, and interest. And it creates a one-time tax on overseas profits at 12%. So basically, you bring the stuff home, it's taxed at 12% for cash holdings, 5% for illiquid assets. So I don't know what that would be if you had a factory or something like that. So those are the things about businesses. And the reason they're doing that, John, is that they want businesses to create jobs. And who creates the jobs in this country? It's small businesses and big corporations as well. But they're hoping by cutting taxes and making the U.S. competitive with the rest of the world, because the U.S. has the highest corporate tax rates in the world. And there's probably at least agreement there between Republicans and Democrats about lowering corporate tax rates, because everybody knows that the U.S., the average tax rate overseas in major developed countries is about 22%, and believe it or not, they're going even lower. Great Britain is due to lower them. Other countries are going to lower their tax rates. Now that the U.S. may go to 20, other countries want to get more competitive, so they'll be lowering their tax rates from the average 22% to even lower. But that, John, is in a nutshell the gist of this tax proposal.
Okay, so several Democrats were saying here, and this is where it all gets messy, by the way, is that, you know, you have what will really happen, then you have the political gain, and you have to sort of wade through all of this. Some of the Democrats were saying that if your income were under $86,100, your taxes would go up by $800. But even the Washington Post, it seems, gave that three Pinocchios in terms of that's not true. So how do you see that?
Well, we actually took a look at that. We took a married couple with two kids that take the standard deduction and make $86,100. So if you make $86,100 in 2017, the standard deduction is $12,000. If you have two kids, that would give you four exemptions. And this is a key thing because they raised the standard, but they did away with the exemption. So your exemptions would be $16,200. And so you would have taxable income roughly of about $58,000. You would have a certain amount of that taxable at 10%, as I mentioned, the first $18,650, and then the rest would be taxed at 15% for a total tax of $7,753. Now, if the Republican tax proposal goes through, the same $86,100 of income, the standard deduction is $24,000, so that would reduce your tax income to $62,100. You would not get your exemptions, so you lose the $16,200 in exemptions. However, the first $90,000 of income is taxed at 12%. 12% of $62,000 is roughly $7,452. So, John, you would actually save $300 in taxes if this proposal goes through. So it is a false claim that your taxes would go up by $800. You would actually go down by $300. Now, it may vary for some people with states. Let's say if you itemize your deductions, but even there's going to be limitations. So we just took it on a standard deduction basis with two kids, and it shows that there are actual tax savings. So four Pinocchios to the Democrats saying that your taxes would go up by $800.
Okay, let's move on. State taxes, which are also called the death tax, property tax reduction, or at least allowance for property tax, which factors in for a lot of homeowners everywhere, and reducing mortgage deductions. And of course, in places where the mortgages are high based and the taxes are high, that could really impact people's taxes.
Yeah, you know, how you're going to be impacted by this really depends is, I hate to say it, folks, where you live. If you live along the West Coast or the East Coast where you have high taxes that you pay, like, let's say, in the state of New York or New Jersey, in other states, and also where property is very expensive in these densely populated areas, you know, like Los Angeles, where the median home price is $600,000, it's $1.4 million in San Francisco, and close to $600,000 here in San Diego. So if you live in one of those states, you could actually have taxes up. I know I was doing my own tax calculations. My taxes are going to go up under this bill, and they're going to go up considerably because a lot of us that live in California get to deduct our state taxes. California has the highest state income taxes in the country at 13.3%. And also, because property is so expensive here, you also have big property tax payments. Well, if they limit the property tax to 10% or $10,000, and they limit home mortgages to $500 from $1,000,001, you know, people that live in California or New York actually get a tax increase. In fact, we're working on a financial plan right now of an executive here that is a top executive with a pharmaceutical company, and he's getting ready to retire in about 4 or 5 years. And so we just, you know, he called and he said, all right, you know, what does this look like for me? What does it mean? And in his case, his taxes were going to go up like $35,000 as a result of if this tax bill goes up. So this idea that it's going to benefit the rich is not true. It might be true if you live in a state that has no state income taxes. If you live in Texas, who cares? You don't pay state income taxes, so that's not really important to you. The only thing that would be important to you would be property taxes. But if you live in those states, you're probably not paying the kind of prices to own a home as you would in California, New York City, or somewhere along the coast. So what happens, John, and what happens to your taxes? This could go all over the place depending on where you live. Depending on where you live determines your taxes, your property taxes, and what you pay to own a home. So the red states are what we call flyover land. You're probably going to see some net benefits because state income taxes and property taxes aren't as big a factor to you as those that live in blue states like my own California or New York City.
All right. Well, the claim that's also being made is that this benefits the rich. We get into this again. So where is that claim coming from? And then is there truth to this?
Well, yes, there is some truth. I mean, the bulk of these tax benefits are going to go to corporations, and that's where the bulk of them are going to go, because they want to create jobs. Obviously, if corporations have less or lower tax rate, if you lower the tax rate from 35% to 20%. Now, where does this benefit the rich guys? Well, let's just take four of the richest Americans: Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos. Actually, Jeff Bezos has now become the richest American at roughly almost $93 billion. Mark Zuckerberg is, he's close to 70 or 80 billion. No, I think he's below Buffett. Buffett's 80 billion, and Zuckerberg is, I think, maybe around 70. So these guys, the bulk of their wealth is in the companies that they own. Less so for Bill Gates. Bill Gates only has about 4% of his wealth in Microsoft stock. Warren Buffett, on the other hand, what we could gather because his holdings are somewhat complex, Warren Buffett owns 37.4% of Berkshire A shares. Jeff Bezos owns 18.5% of Amazon, and Mark Zuckerberg owns 28.2% of Facebook. So if you are a billionaire where the bulk of your stock is in the corporation you started, well, if they lower tax rates from 35% down to 20%, obviously you are a beneficiary. But all four of these companies, Facebook, Amazon, Berkshire, Microsoft, are creating jobs. So yes, Bill Gates is going to benefit as a result, along with Warren, Jeff Bezos, and Mark Zuckerberg. So there is some truth. The guys up at the very top, the billionaires, are going to make out, and the reason is they're lowering the corporate tax rate. But then everybody else that has a corporation are going to be a benefit, and that's how wealth is created in this country. The Rockefellers created Standard Oil. The Waltons created Walmart. So this is where the wealth in this country comes from. And that's what they wanted to do. They want corporations to take this money and reinvest it and build factories, hire workers, because that's what makes an economy grow. And that's one reason why they're going to lower a one-time tax of repatriating profits of 12%. My argument to anybody that says, well, gosh, this is terrible, you're going to give this break to wealthy people. Well, look at it from another perspective. If you keep the tax rate at 35% and they don't bring the money back, 35% of zero is still zero. 12% of $2.5 trillion is a lot of money in tax revenues.
Okay, right at the moment, it seems like there's just a lot of juggling going around and shuffling. It's not really tax reform, but let's talk about the negatives, okay?
Well, you take a look at, they're doing away with itemized deductions, state taxes, property taxes, limiting mortgage, medical deductions, property and casualty deductions, and miscellaneous. And, you know, to me, I think it's somewhat of a Trojan horse because, you know, they hold up the postcard and they go, look, we're simplifying taxes. You can file your tax return on a postcard. Well, there's a good reason you can file it on a postcard. They're taking away all your deductions. And that's why it's going to get that small. So the first negative, in my opinion, is we're getting lower tax rates, but not by much. And John, the next Democrat comes in, he raises tax rates. I mean, let's go back to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan got away with the excess deductions on real estate. He got rid of tax write-offs. He got rid of sales tax deductions. He got rid of a lot of stuff that was used to shelter. I mean, back in the 80s, I could zero out your income taxes because I had so many tax shelters available to me to work with. So Reagan got rid of those. In exchange, he brought the tax rate from 50%, phased it down to 28% over a four-year period. Now, he got rid of the deductions up front. So we had 1 year of 28% tax rates. George H. Bush comes into office, raises tax rates to 31%, and then he's followed by Bill Clinton, who raises the tax rates to 39.6% and puts in place the Pease Amendment that phases out part of your itemized deductions. So what would happen is we would lose a good majority of all of our itemized deductions, and what's to stop the next Democrat or even down the road, maybe even a Republican, from raising taxes? Now you're really paving the way for higher taxes down the road because no longer do you have the itemized deductions to offset your taxable income. The second thing that strikes me, it's coming at the wrong time. We're putting fiscal stimulus in at the end of a business cycle and at the midway point of a Fed rate raising cycle. If they do this now, what the heck are they going to do in the next downturn? If they're putting in fiscal stimulus now, then what happens when we go into a recession? Because right now, if you come out with this fiscal stimulus, you have monetary policy, which is going to fight against you and offset much of the benefits of the fiscal stimulus. What you want is fiscal stimulus to work in tandem with monetary policy like we did in 2009 and like we did in 2001 and 2003, where you lowered taxes and you were lowering interest rates. They were both working at the same time. Well, now you're going to have fiscal stimulus coming in at the end of a business cycle and monetary policy is going to work against it. Number three. We are moving towards the European model of socialism. And what I mean by that is in Europe has been lowering corporate tax rates. At the same time, they've been increasing individual tax rates. So if you look at countries like France, Europe, Germany, they've been lowering their tax rates on corporations, and it's due to fall even further. Great Britain is due to lower its tax rates to somewhere around 17%. So what we're doing is we're following that European model, and we're going to make it easier for corporations to create jobs, and we're going to do that by lowering their tax rates. So we're going to do that on one hand. On the other hand, with individuals, we're going to raise tax rates. So if you look at France, Japan, Germany, Canada, Great Britain, Ireland, all of these countries have lowered their corporate tax rates, and it's one of the reasons why so much U.S. corporate profits are held overseas. They estimate $2.5 to $4 trillion. The reason is the tax rates are lower there. It's like anything else. It's like moving from the state of California to the state of Texas where you pay no income taxes, or you move to Arizona where the tax rates are lower. However, these very same countries have been raising their personal income tax rates. Japan, France, Canada, Ireland, and now the U.S., Germany, and U.K. have all raised their income taxes. So, John, we're following that European model, lower tax rates on corporations, but raise them on individual taxpayers. And the thing that really strikes me, I really think this is a Trojan horse. They're going to take away all those itemized deductions, everything you spend money on for medical, or let's say mortgage interest, for property taxes, state taxes, miscellaneous property and casualty losses, student loan interest. All those things are going to be taken away. And yes, they will simplify them. And the reason they're going to simplify them is they're going to take away all the deductions that take up all those pages on your tax return. And it almost reminds me of we're heading towards what I call a 21st century version of feudalism, where you have lords and princes and serfs. And that's where we're going if we continue with this. So you have to argue, will this be positive? It will be positive for job creation. But I would say the biggest negative overall is they're doing this at a time when the business cycle is aging and when the Fed is raising interest rates. This is not the kind of thing you typically do at the end of a business cycle, but I think they're doing a lot more of this, I think, for political reasons.
So, Jim, I take it that it's pretty obvious. I don't think you're in favor, but I don't think I am either. Frankly, I think it's a big shell game. Instead of being real tax reform, this is not tax reform, and the shells are being moved around. And you're right, we're being set up to be Reaganized. But your final opinion on the whole thing?
I don't like it for two reasons. Number one, I think it's coming at the wrong time. And number two, they're not putting this in and saying that it can't be raised later on. If they came in and say that, you know, we're going to pass a law that we cannot raise income taxes for the next 10 years, I'd feel better about it. But what I don't like is they're taking away all these deductions. And for, you know, families that live in places like New York, New Jersey, California, where the cost of living is so high, we have high sales tax, we have high property taxes, we have high income taxes, we have high gasoline taxes, we have high utility taxes, high phone tax. You name it, in our state, if it moves or breathes, we tax it. So, you know, it makes it much easier when you live in these high expensive places in the world or the United States to live that you're able to take these deductions. So, you know, John, I just simply don't like that because we have no assurance that the next president or the next Congress turns around and says, oh, we're going to raise tax rates. And what have you lost? You lost all your deductions and they raise taxes, which I think they will, because we know sooner or later the government's going to have fiscal crises problems with the deficit. I mean, we have $20 trillion of debt right now, and that's going to get even worse. The Congressional Budget Office is estimating that we'll be at $25 trillion by the end of the next decade. I mean, that is a lot of money. You know, Obama got lucky. In his 8 years, interest rates were coming down every single year of his presidency. So even though the debt went up, the actual interest expense of the government actually went down. Now we're reversing that direction, which will be the topic of our next big picture item here, is more rate hikes and higher interest rates are on their way.
And we'll do that next as the big picture continues on the Financial Sense NewsHour at the usual place, financialsense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
You know, Financial Sense NewsHour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense NewsHour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
I think the U.S. consumer is not in great shape. We do see a rising real income, but we see that spending growth is even higher, and as a result, the savings rate has dropped to a multi-year low recently. That is not the precondition for a sustainable extension or advance of the economy. I really think that the U.S. economy is tired, and the tax stimulus, if it comes, and I think we will see something, may extend the expansion by another year or so, but I do expect that 19 and 20 will be a window for recession.
As president, there are a few decisions more important than nominating leaders of integrity and good judgment to hold trusted positions in public office. And few of those trusted positions are more important than the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Accordingly, it is my pleasure and my honor to announce my nomination of Jerome Powell to be the next chairman of the Federal Reserve. Congratulations, Jay.
Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour. Jim Poplava, John Loeffler here with you. Well, there was lots of financial news this week hitting the markets. We had the GOP tax plan finally concretized, at least the working plan. Of course, we just discussed that here on the program. The Fed's FOMC met, promising more interest rate hikes down the road. The President Trump, appointed Jerome Powell as the new Federal Reserve Chairman. Not a lot of surprises there, Jim, but just a lot of activity. So what does all of this signify?
Well, let's begin with the FOMC meeting. There was no surprises there. Nobody expected them to raise at this meeting. However, even though they didn't raise, they said, hey, we're on track for one more hike this year. Well, what does that mean? They're going to raise next month. And so this year, this will be the first time in this Fed raising cycle that they've been able to raise interest rates more than once in a single year, because up until this time, they raised interest rates once in 2015, and they raised them once in 2016. If they go ahead as expected next month, they will raise by a quarter of a point, taking the Fed funds rate from 1.25% to 1.5%. And you're already seeing that reflected in Treasury bills, 3-month T-bills, 1-month T-bills, the 2-year note, and the 5-year note. So I guess if you are a saver, if you are in cash, I guess the good news, if you're in Treasuries, the interest rates are going to go up. Don't expect too much on your bank CDs, because banks are loath to pass the increases on to their depositors, because there just isn't a lot of demand for money today. So, you know, if we were having a robust credit market, you would see that reflected. Banks would have to get more competitive because they would need deposits to fund those loans, in which case they would turn around and offer you higher deposit rates like they did in the last decade. When we were going through the real estate boom, banks wanted more deposits. They had to fight for them because they were making loans and they had to pay a higher rate. That certainly is not the case today. They also said they're sticking to their guns. They're expecting that they will raise interest rates 3 more times next year. And John, if we do get this fiscal stimulus that comes in mainly on the corporate side with this tax bill, then that could get us a little bit of more economic growth. The economy begins to heat up more, and the Fed would proceed with 3 additional rate hikes. If that takes place, let's say at this time next year, we'd be roughly at 2.25% on the Fed funds rate, which is not too much below where we are right now in the 10-year Treasury at roughly about 2.4%. So what does this mean for you, the borrower? Your borrowing costs are going to go up, because when they do that, the prime lending rate will go up. Depending on what's going on in the mortgage market, mortgage rates should go up. The only way we would see lower long-term rates is if we head into a recession and the yield curve inverts, meaning short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. But what the Fed is also doing is at the end of December, beginning in January, they increase their shrinking of their balance sheet. Instead of $10 billion a month, they'll raise that to $20 billion. And at the end of March, they'll raise it to $30 billion. So that means you're going to have less buying of treasuries. And the only reason that we're seeing treasury markets stay as low as they are right now, a lot of that is a reflection of what's going on in Europe and elsewhere around the world where interest rates are much lower. I mean, right now on this Friday, our 2-year treasury note is at 1.6%. Go to Germany and it's a negative 0.75%. Go to Italy, it's a negative almost 0.2%. Go to Japan, it's negative. Switzerland, it's negative. And even if you go to the UK, in fact, one of the key things that also happened this week is the Bank of England raised interest rates for the first time in a long time. So we are now beginning to see others follow the U.S. in a rate raising cycle. Canada's raising rates. The U.S. is raising rates. Now Great Britain is raising rates. The ECB will be paring back. They're going to go through what their tapering is. So what's keeping rates low on the long end is a lot of that money in Europe. So if you're in Europe today and you're an institution, you're a corporation, where are you going to put your money? Are you going to put your money in a Swiss government note where you're going to pay the Swiss government almost a full percentage point to loan them money? Are you going to keep it in Italy where you pay the government? So that's what's keeping it elevated. But we expect gradually you're going to see rates start to rise. And if they don't rise, it'll only be because we're in a recession and the yield curve inverts.
And Chris, you have to ask the question why they are raising when they actually admit that they haven't hit their inflation target at 2%.
You know, their personal preference for inflation is the personal consumption expenditure gauge. That's up about 1.6% year over year. No, they haven't hit their target in this recovery, just like basically their economic forecast. What they're trying to do, John, here is normalize Fed policy. They know sooner or later we're going to be in a recession that they will lead us to. And what they're doing is typically the Fed has always raised interest rates when the economy is overheating and inflation is overheating. So they try to cool the economy by raising interest rates to cool the temperature down. They don't have an overheating economy right now. But could they possibly, if we get this tax stimulus, that could happen. Oil prices rise, that could happen. So if we see these tax cuts get passed and the economy, the economic growth right now is up to 3%, something we haven't seen in 8 years. So the economy is growing at a much faster pace. Throw in inflation and throw in a faster economic growth, you will see the Fed get more aggressive. You could even see, instead of 3 rate hikes, you could see 4. In other words, they could get a little bit more aggressive on their rate hikes. The other thing that you have now, and this is something we're watching closely for getting into next year. Right now, the unemployment rate is at the lowest it's been in 18 years. But there are a lot of jobs out there that employers can't find qualified workers to fill. This is especially true in manufacturing and in high tech. So what this is doing, it's forcing employers, when you can't find somebody to fill these job openings that you have, it's forcing you to pay higher wages to your existing workers. What does that translate into? It translates into higher wages and higher wage inflation. So that's something that the Fed pays a lot of attention. And as you see these wages rise and economic growth pick up, that's just going to give them more incentive to stick with their rate raising plan. And as we have a saying here on the program, they will keep raising until they crash the airplane. And so, John, I see nothing on the horizon that would take away from the fact that we are going to be looking at higher interest rates, and that will eventually nullify much of the benefits of the tax fiscal stimulus. So this is why we talked in the last section, why we thought this just wasn't the time and we don't like this tax bill. Now, what they did do is they changed some of the language in the statement, and they got rid of economic activity rising moderately because it's no longer doing that. We have gone to a 3% economic growth from the 2% the Fed was forecasting, and they got rid of the concerns over the hurricane, as we just got the first print on third quarter GDP. It was 3.1%. It was much better and higher than most people were anticipating. A lot of people thought we'd come in maybe at 2.5, 2.6 because of the damage that the hurricanes did to the Gulf region, but that's not the case. So if inflation picks up with tax cuts, expect the Fed to get more aggressive with rate cuts.
And of course, the other big news we got this week is we have a new Fed chairman being appointed, assuming approval by Congress.
You bring up a point, John. I mean, President Trump nominated Jerome Powell, but he still has to be approved by the Senate. But what he does is the markets liked it because he is basically bringing continuity with Yellen. What you don't want to see is an appointment where somebody does an about face or a shift in major Fed policy. That would rattle the market. In fact, Powell has supported Janet Yellen on every single policy decision. And despite a lot of misgivings, you know, he has come to embrace a lot of the Fed's policies. What was interesting is when Bernanke was chairman, he basically told Ben that when they were launching the first rounds of QE, he thought it wouldn't work. And so he was urging Bernanke not to do it. Well, he later retracted that barely a few months after joining the Fed in May of 2012. He told his colleagues that he was worried about these bond buying would be ineffective and would roil the markets. In fact, in his memoirs, The Courage to Act, Bernanke recounts how Mr. Powell had quietly urged him to find an off-ramp, allowing the Fed to wind down the program, which is what we're actually going through right now, that began under Yellen. However, in the end, the economy and the labor markets continued to strengthen with inflation remaining subdued. So Mr. Powell has conceded that he had indeed been wrong in his personal beliefs and opinions. So the other thing that he is in favor of, he said that if the U.S. gets into a recession or we get into market difficulties, he would not hesitate to use the same policies, meaning the Fed would lower interest rates and initiate another round of quantitative easing going into the bond market, buying bonds. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Fed continues its program and interest rates on the long end do not rise as much as some people anticipate. And the main reason that would not happen are two reasons. One, European buying and institutional buying continues to come in the U.S. market because we're the only game in town when it comes to interest rates. You know, look at it from their perspective. You're an institution or a company overseas. You want to put your money. And remember, corporations are sitting on trillions and trillions of dollars of cash. You can't put it in a bank because it's not insured. So any treasurer of a corporation would have his head handed to him if he stuck all that kind of billions of dollars with the bank. So they primarily invest their money in treasuries where it's safe, it's liquid, and they can get at it. Well, if you're a European treasurer of a major European corporation, you're going to put your money at the government and then pay them money to lend them money? No, you're probably going to go to the U.S. where you can get a rate differential that's sometimes as much as several percent versus what you can get in your own country. So that would be one reason why rates don't go up. The second would be we actually get into a recession. So the point I'm making here is this time around, they're not going to be able to get the interest rates up like Greenspan and Bernanke did, where they took the Fed funds rate from 1% to over 5%. You know, it's my prediction we won't get much over 2 this go around, which will make it interesting because in the next downturn, what happens to interest rates when you're not starting at 5, you're starting at maybe 2.25, maybe 2.5, at half the level of interest rates, and you bring them back down to 0, where do rates go on the long end? And I wonder if my friend Gary Schilling's prediction is that we will see a 1% rate of interest on the 10-year note and a 2% rate of interest on the 30-year bond. That will be an interesting one to watch.
So overall, would you say the markets like Mr. Powell as the next candidate here for Fed chair?
Yeah, because the markets like predictability and continuity, and that's what you're going to get with this Fed chairman. There was a little bit of speculation that, hey, he really wasn't for QE. He's in very much in favor of gradual rate hikes, in admitting that he was wrong about quantitative easing and lowering of interest rates. He said in several talks that he's given, he would not hesitate to do the same thing over again. And that's why I think it's going to be interesting this next downturn. Is this guy smart enough to say, wait a minute, if we go into a recession, I'm going to have to lower interest rates again. I'm going to have to go to quantitative easing. Do I really want to raise interest rates that much only in order to lower them again when we get into a recession? In other words, will he be even more cautious on raising interest rates than Yellen has been? And that's something we simply do not know at this point, other than the fact that he's been consistently voting in favor of supporting Yellen on all measures. And that's something, John, we're not going to get to know till next year. We had a PMI report came in less than expected, but basically right now we've had two signals but they're only 1 month. So I'm not going to put much credence in some of the PMIs that show that a softening in the economy, but this is only 1 month. What happens in the next 2 or 3 months is going to be more important. But for now, we've got continuity at the Fed, another rate hike coming in December, possibly another one coming in January. So higher rate hikes, higher interest rates are on their way.
And I guess overall, from what we've talked about here on the show today, probably the most interesting thing is going to be this tax battle to see what really shakes out in the plan and how the people in the Republic actually react to it. But other than that, what are we looking forward to in weeks to come?
In weeks to come, we're going to be watching where the holiday season is upon us. So it's estimated that online sales are set to rise another double digits this year, and brick and mortar sales are due to drop by almost 4 or 5% from last year. So the trend in place during the holiday season looks like it's going to play forward once again this year. So we'll be watching that for the holidays, what's happening on online sales. It's amazing. We used to watch Black Friday, which was the day after Thanksgiving, what was going on. That's becoming less and less important as more and more seasonal holiday shopping goes online. We'll be watching that. We're ending corporate earnings season. So other than that, I guess the big thing to watch, what happens to this tax bill? They're saying we hope to get this done before Thanksgiving. Good luck, guys, in trying to do this, but we're going to be keeping an eye on that because that's the big one to watch heading into the end of the year, along with online sales. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense News Hour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.